This week on the Finding Impact podcast, we're bringing you the lifeline that every social entrepreneur needs to know about: funding for when you hit an unexpected roadblock.
FindingImpact.com. FindingImpact.com. Helping you scale your social business.
Hey everyone, my name is Andy Narricot. I'm the founder of Finding Impact, the show with an audience of real social entrepreneurs, with businesses serving the base of the pyramid and people who want to equip themselves with the strategies and tactics that will help them succeed. And this week really plays into that for sure. This week, I'm excited to share Open Road Alliance with you. They provide emergency capital to social impact organizations to save them from unexpected roadblocks. So this has got to be on everyone's radar, as it's a vital piece of the social enterprise ecosystem that's available to anyone who fits their criteria and things go wrong. So, you know, this has got to be in your toolbox. And we're going to explain all of the processes, all the criteria, and Caroline does a wonderful job at sort of bringing this to life with some case studies as well of how it's helped and overcome the roadblocks in other organizations. So remember to head on over to findingimpact.com to check out all the show notes and some useful links that we mentioned in this interview. And while you're there, sign up to our newsletter, which I hope is succinct, it's friendly, it provides a few choice tender links for you to digest every other week, everything you need to know, or the choicest links you need to know in the social enterprise ecosystem. So without any further ado, it's a pleasure to introduce to you Caroline Bressan. Hey everyone, I've got Caroline Bressan here, and we're going to talk about this incredible service for social impact organizations that I want you all to know about, because it could be the lifeline for your social enterprise that you didn't know you had. And for when things go wrong, unexpected roadblocks appear, like they do, this is here for you. So Open Road Alliance provides capital to social impact organizations facing an unexpected roadblock during implementation, and such as misfortune, acts of God, or funder-created roadblocks. And we're going to dig into that in a little bit. Open Road provide their assistance either via loans or grants. So we're going to go into all of this in more detail so you will know when your organization might qualify when things go wrong. Caroline is Director of Social Investments at Open Road Alliance, based in the US, having previously had spells with Dahlberg's investment advisory arm and with Calvert Foundation as an investment officer. So, welcome, Caroline.
Hi, Andy. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for coming on. I said to you earlier, I'm really privileged, and it is a pleasure to shine a light on what you're doing, because it's just amazing what you provide. And get this, for one thing, just to everyone out there, that I heard from decision to from initial request to decision being made was a period of 6 weeks. So when things go wrong, you need quick action, and Open Road Alliance can do that. So anyway, just a little bit of anecdote. So Open Road Alliance, pretty unique. Caroline, what's the story behind why it was set up?
Sure. So we are about 7 years old now. We were founded by Dr. Lori Michaels, who's an individual philanthropist here in the U.S. Based on her own experience in philanthropy, she noticed that the sector overall lacked contingency funding and any bridge financing mechanisms for when something goes wrong. And so I kind of think about it as social enterprises are kind of the working poor of the business world. They don't have access to traditional financing tools that can act as a safety net when the unexpected happens. So we started as a grant-making organization, and then a few years back dabbled in recoverable grants and jumped in headfirst with a loan fund in 2018.
Brilliant. So started off as grants, and now you've moved on to recoverable grants. What would be the sort of time period that people would have to repay that grant? Loan.
Yeah. In 2018, launched our loan fund, Open Road Ventures, which is a $50 million commitment towards short-term loans towards solving these unexpected roadblocks and cash crunches. So to date, we've put out about $18 million towards that target. And the timeline is usually under 12 months in terms of repayment. The shortest loan we ever did was 45 days, but it can be kind of anywhere in between. And we do this with three types of loans. We have a loan product called Bridge to Committed Funding, which is really our biggest category. And essentially that is you have some sort of commitment in the future from a funder, whether it be investor or donor, a term sheet in hand, but no cash in the bank. The second is some sort of unexpected delay in accounts receivables. So, you know, these guys are supposed to pay you 60, 90 days later. The cash hasn't come up and now you're in a cash crunch due to some unforeseen circumstance. And then lastly, some sort of unexpectedly large purchase order. So you'd been talking about a $200,000 order from a buyer, and then when it comes in, it's $500K. I think you know very well that in our social sector, there's no fast working capital available to take advantage of some of these opportunities. So we'll also provide financing for that.
Great. Okay, so I'm a bit slow, so I'm just going to recap here. So bridged committed funding, so you've got commitment from a investor, but there's some delays and you're facing a cash crunch.
Yeah, and maybe backing up, you know, I was raised by an economist, so I tend to think about things at a market level. Mm-hmm. And right now, the social sector is fairly inefficient. So there are many moments of friction in the market, if you will, where an organization is growing, then it hits a snag, kind of two steps forward, one step back kind of thing. And with Open Road Ventures, we believe if we can provide that short-term bridge loan to get past the cash crunch, in the long run, a social enterprise's growth will be that much greater without having to recover from those kind of fits and starts.
Okay. Good. So you have that that bridge loan and the investors, right? So if it's for some reason, there is some stumbling block. There's something is holding up the process. Okay. And it'd be great to get some little sort of examples of these. And then the second one was accounts receivable. So can you just maybe just give us some color on that one?
Sure. So one example I can give on this is a U.S. example, and I'll mention we make loans to both nonprofits and for-profit social enterprises.
Yeah.
We worked with a nonprofit called Open Door Legal, who's based in San Francisco, and they have a goal of providing universal access to legal representation for the population in San Francisco as a way to show that if everyone has access to these legal services, poverty can actually be reduced. And they had received a contract from the city of San Francisco to work with some of the homeless population there. And unfortunately, it was taking them a really long time to get through the city's procurement system. So it actually took them 9 months between entering the contract and getting paid. So they're doing all these services. They're a nonprofit with a budget under $1 million. And they're expecting $100,000 from the city of San Francisco, but no cash is in the bank. So we provided the $100,000 bridge loan for those delayed receivables. And then when they finally got paid from the city, they repaid us that loan.
Brilliant. So you've got this commitment in place. But can I just, on that specific example, and this is maybe a general point, there is some risk involved. So you are taking on risk that perhaps there's a political risk. There could be a change of political leader in that instance, and maybe they sort of go back on their commitment because all the contracting hasn't done. So you're accounting for that risk as well, are you?
Absolutely. And I would say where we like to play most is where there is an issue with timing and a misperception of risk. So we're not saying that what we're doing is zero risk, but we do think it's lower risk than kind of the general perception in the market.
Great. Okay. So you're going to do your due diligence and understand that risk a lot better than maybe someone else. And that went ahead in that instance. Brilliant. So that's accounts receivable. That's a great example. The next one, the large purchase order. Can you give us an example of that one?
Sure. So we've done this a few times. It's definitely the smallest part of our portfolio. But when a social enterprise has been working really hard and oftentimes gets a blue chip contract with either a company or a government, you know, those contracts can take months to years to negotiate. And sometimes when they come in, the order of magnitude that the dollar amount is different can be quite overwhelming for an entrepreneur. One example is we worked with a solar home system company in Mexico, where they put a bid in to provide solar home services to the last 3% of unelectrified people in Mexico. And they put a bid in with a government tender. They were one of something like 15 different contractors. They thought they'd get a small portion of it for sure, but they ended up with a contract that was 10x their expectations. And so overnight, they, you know, they go to the local bank and they say, well, we can give you a 22% loan that also requires collateral. And these opportunities, we do think, can be really defining for social enterprises. So when there is kind of a history of being able to deliver on orders generally, and this big opportunity on the horizon, we'll step in with a one-time loan to be able to take advantage of that.
Yeah, that's amazing. And again, you know, that was the thing that I was thinking about is that do they have the capacity to take on that massive order? And that is a little bit of a risk that you're taking on. But you're, you know, I think that's a great use of capital. You're betting on them for massive impact. But it's, as you say, it's a huge transition point for that social enterprise, and it's giving them a step up that they wouldn't otherwise get. The market wouldn't look at it that way.
Yeah, and it's really what we've become experts in, right? So you've got plenty of venture capital firms that specialize in technology or agriculture. We specialize in underwriting future cash flows for short-term loans, as sexy as that sounds.
Well, no, it is. I mean, it's fascinating, especially since you're also doing that for the nonprofit space as well. Can we now, so I know we've done this in a funny order. We did a second, third example, but I'd love to go back to the first one, because I think maybe that's where many people perceive that to be a huge risk, or something that I've been aware of as an advisor to social enterprise, you know, that bridge funding that, you know, looking to raise a Series A or whatever, and it's just not coming through, or there's regulatory issues or whatever. Can you give us an example of that?
Sure. And you're absolutely right, Andy. It is what we see most frequently. And I'll say about half of our portfolio is in East Africa. So it's certainly something that is happening with some frequency in your market as well. One example I can give is, you know, there was a bunch of news last year when Husk Power raised $20 million in their Series C. And Husk has been a great partner of the Shell Foundation and a number of impact investors over the years. And they're kind of getting to this stage where they're taking commercial capital. When they were going through the closing process with their investors, they found out that they needed to file a anti-monopoly approval from the Tanzanian regulators. And so there is this new law, I think it's around 12 to 18 months old at this point, that says that the Tanzanian authorities need to take a look whenever foreign capital is investing in a company, even if it's registered internationally, that's operating in Tanzania. Unfortunately, the time it took to get approval in Husk's instance was 5 months. So wow. They literally had $20 million sitting in escrow after doing, you know, a tremendous amount of work to get to that point with investors, and they couldn't access it for 5 months. So we gave a bridge loan of $500,000, which they repaid us when they were able to access those funds and got the approval from the Tanzanian authorities.
Wow, that's incredible. So there was this Series C huge raise. And I'm assuming then during that fundraising process, the law then appeared. It didn't appear. So a lot of the investors didn't see that in their due diligence. And it was just a sort of a out of the blue thing that appeared.
They didn't see it coming. That's right.
So that's And that's so, you know, do you also then speak with some of the investors and say, hey guys, don't back out, you know, we can help with this situation? Has that ever happened?
Absolutely. So we develop strong relationships with investors who are often kind of our referral partners. So, you know, sitting here in the U.S., we're not doing on-site due diligence. We're really looking to create this high-quality referral network of people that know these social enterprises and nonprofits well. When I dig into the criteria, I can kind of reference our diligence process as well. The insight from people that have visited and have that local insight are hugely critical to us.
Mm. Well, this is amazing. I mean, you're obviously producing so much knowledge here as well about what goes wrong. You have, because I've seen a report that you've done, which was looking at, well, maybe you could tell us, you've done this roadblock analysis report recently released. We'll link it up in the show notes for all the audience to go and check it out. But can you give us a little intro to that piece of research?
Absolutely. So the roadblock analysis is something that we launched last year, and Open Road really does believe in kind of building the data set for what goes wrong in the social sector with the hopes that both investors, funders, and entrepreneurs and nonprofits can use it to better plan for potential risks on the horizon. So the roadblock analysis so far has around 150 data points. And the high-level takeaways are that about half of what these cash crunches are caused by are due to funder-created obstacles. And so much of this is, delays in disbursement. There are a few instances of funder misfortune. So if you are, somebody that relies on oil prices and oil prices drop, all of a sudden you can't fulfill commitments. The other big buckets are organization misfortune and acts of God or economics, which is a lot of government intervention. With social enterprise, what we see the most are delays in disbursement. And I can certainly talk about that more just in terms of what we'd ask from the sector. But overall, we think with our advocacy work, we can hopefully reduce the funder-created obstacles. We recognize that the acts of God or economics and organization misfortune will kind of always continue to occur because the world is unpredictable. But we hope that we can build this data set so that a agriculture social enterprise in Kenya can look and see, hey, these are my top three risks that are most likely to occur. My board and I should have some sort of plan if that does happen, or contingency in place.
Brilliant. There's a clear action point there. Is that anyone going through investment fundraising process, take a look at the report and see what are those top risks that you would expect or others have seen as they've followed a similar path to you, and have a discussion about it, take it to your board and put a contingency plan in place. Brilliant. Can you talk, I mean, you hinted at that, but I think you do need to say a little bit about the message to the sector, message to funders. Why are some of these roadblocks that are a main cause coming from the funder side? Why are they happening, and what can they do to mitigate that?
Sure. Well, maybe starting from the entrepreneur's side, I think as much as an entrepreneur has to be optimistic to continue pushing forward, as a lender, we also have to think about the worst case scenario. I often like to say that I'm no fun at a party because of that. what happens if none of those many irons in the fire come through? What is the backup to the backup plan? And unfortunately, we've seen it can be risky to place too much value specifically on the timing of decision making and disbursement from funders. To mitigate these risks, our message to entrepreneurs would be, when talking to investors, you should first make sure they've already raised their funding. So is the money in the bank? And two, ask if they've made their first deal out of their new fund. Obviously, if they're, an existing investor that's made lots of deals, it's not an issue. But we've seen a few deals go bad where there's just a misaligned expectations between an investment deal team that has really good intentions and a new investment committee that was on a different page. Hmm. So that's what I would say from the entrepreneur side. Of course, the burden shouldn't have to fall to the entrepreneurs alone. We believe that impact investors, and I would say particularly in East Africa, could do a better job about being clear and transparent regarding their application process, timeline to disbursement, and of course, criteria that they use to make decisions. I think we've seen this in the U.S. as well in traditional philanthropy, where nonprofits and social enterprises need funding so badly, and then they put a lot of weight into what a program officer, an investment officer says to them about their chances and timing of their diligence process. Right now, it's a pretty inefficient and opaque process that kind of ends up eating more management time than is necessary. So I would say small things like putting an Our Investment Process page on your website, or having a standard one pager that lays out the different approval steps needed actually to get to funding could go a long way towards saving some entrepreneur time.
Definitely. So some visibility into that process so they can, you know, as you say, it's completely opaque in some instances, and you're going on the inferences or the suggestions which might be taken the wrong way by some investment officer. It can definitely, that whole process can be cleaned up and made more efficient, for sure.
And people have a hard time saying no. So yeah. It's definitely the worst part of my job, but we kind of have the responsibility to face that and get to a quick no when possible and be really clear and direct about that.
That's something that my good friend Christy Peacock had said in a previous interview, that a good no is very welcome when you're in fundraising process, because then you can move on to the next one and not waste your time and anyone's time, because you're running a business and trying to fundraise at the same time.
Yep.
Brilliant. Good. So we're going to link up that, but there's some really good actionable advice there for both social entrepreneurs and the investors. And this work that you're doing to help, you know, improve the social impact ecosystem. But let's move on to what everyone, I'm sure, is wondering about is, A, first of all, can we hear the criteria? I mean, what is the sweet spot? What are you know, how can, if I'm a social entrepreneur, I'm thinking, you know, I need to be ready when I come into this situation. What sort of criteria do you need satisfied for a conversation to be had? And then we could go into the process. But let's first of all think about the criteria.
Great. So OpenRoad does not have any sector or geography focus. So we rely heavily on the four criteria we do have. And it also carves out kind of how our model works because of the way these criteria fit together. So the first criteria is that it has to be mid-implementation, which essentially means you had all the money you needed and then something happened that was outside of your control. And this first criteria really helps us use our leverage model to move quickly, right? So some other funder or investor has already kicked the tires with extensive due diligence. We can talk to them. We can get assurances from them and keep moving. The second criteria is our unexpected criteria. And we like to say there's two types of unexpected. There's oops and there's oh my God. And we're only funding those OMG moments where something external outside of the management team's control is happening to the organization. And I think this one can be difficult for entrepreneurs because, you know, you're making bets all the time that things will play out. And of course, you're not going to get it right 100% of the time. But it does have to be something, like I mentioned, the roadblock analysis. It has to be a funder pulling out after, you know, being at term sheet stage. It has to be the government changing a policy so that now you have a, you know, a larger VAT tax to pay. Or it has to be something unfortunate has happened to your organization, like an office being robbed, or we actually had one instance where a CEO got dengue for a second time and had to leave the tropics for good. So those kind of things that are very much outside of the course of regular business. And that helps us as well move quickly because we don't have to say, oh, is the management team making good decisions or not? We just have to look at the kind of quality of the roadblock at hand. Mm-hmm. The third criteria is our discrete criteria. And basically that says we need to be able to fully solve the problem at hand and not kind of kick the can down the road. I like to say a half-solved problem is still a problem. And so our loans can go up to $500,000. Our average loan size is around 300K. But if you have $1 million gap, we're not going to be able to fund you until you find that first 500K. The last criteria is our catalytic impact criteria, which certainly is, the hardest to define. We ask ourselves two questions. Does this model have the potential to be system changing, either in design or scale? And two, what's the probability of achieving that impact? So I could tell you that I was going to cure HIV tomorrow. High potential, low probability. So it would fail the catalytic test. And so those are our four criteria. And happy to jump into the process after this.
Yeah, absolutely. But I just want to recap a little quick summary for everyone. So four criteria, geography not important, not a piece of the criteria. So mid-implementation, so you had all the money and then something happens. And that's really key. Then the second one is an oops. It's an oh my God, not an oops.
Yeah.
So external, out of your control, and you gave some great examples there. Three, discrete. So Open Road Alliance wants to fully solve the problem and not just kick it down the road. I get that. One follow-up question to that. Does Open Road ever able to partner with another organization if the... it's more than what Open Road can provide, that you could sort of help solve the problem with another organization, or does it have to be just Open Road's effort?
No, not at all. We love to partner and have a few examples of where either current investors or foundations have stepped up to provide the other portion of the gap.
Yeah, brilliant. Okay, so... collaborative, fantastic. And then the fourth is that catalytic. So from what I understand, then that is the model, the social enterprise or the nonprofit that you are supporting and providing assistance to has to be doing something game changing, system changing. It can't be just another social enterprise that is providing, something that isn't going to solve a problem, but it's maybe providing solar panels to a whole new set of towns and villages, but that wouldn't qualify because it's not systems changing, or what?
Well, I would say it depends. I think the most important thing to remember is we are a philanthropic initiative. And so when we fund organizations, our own personal strategy is to fund social enterprises that have clear intentionality and measurement around their impact. And so positive externalities are not sufficient for us to make a loan to a social enterprise.
Okay. All right. So I get it. So it's got to be pretty catalytic in that regard. Okay, great. So now let's move on to process. So if you think you fit that criteria, the 4 points, what's next?
Great. So our process, we try to be as paperwhite as possible. We do have a entrepreneur-centric approach to our work. So entrepreneurs are our customers, not the other way around, and we try to respond to their timeline. Typically takes around 4 to 6 weeks. The fastest we've ever moved was 7 days, which, wow. Honestly, I probably don't want to replicate.
Goodbye, weekend.
There it is, exactly. So it all starts with either connecting to us through one of your existing investors or reaching out to our funding@openroadalliance.org email. And we'll start with an initial conversation where we talk through your model and ask questions about the roadblock. And we'll give you kind of a diagnosis in that call of how well things are fitting into our criteria. If it sounds like it's a pretty good fit, then we move on to our application, which, again, we try to keep pretty light. It's around 4 pages, just talks about your model, the roadblock, the solution, and the impact. We give you feedback to try to make that application as strong as possible before moving to our investment committee. That's just a 1-hour call where we ask questions about your model and the roadblock. And then we make a decision after that within a week. In between, we, you know, check references, we'll talk through repayment structures, et cetera. But that's kind of the gist of the process.
Wow. I mean, you must have a pretty slick legal team who can do all of that so quickly.
Well, the legal team, we have, you know, just a form of promissory note. And I think the kind of innovation from our end on repayment has been that we always negotiate a plan A and plan B repayment structure up front with a very clear trigger. Because again, we recognize that the world is unpredictable. So oftentimes entrepreneurs will say, oh yeah, no problem. We're going to repay you in 3 months. And then there's some further delay. Mm. So we're happy to have that as the plan A, but if XYZ doesn't happen by those 3 months, then we'll switch to often a slightly longer repayment plan that, you know, is kind of amortizing instead of in big balloon payments.
Amazing. And can I ask, I mean, have you had any defaults, any situations where maybe a company has failed or gone down the hole? What's happened?
We have had one loss out of 60 loans to date.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
Fortunately, it was a small loan. And then obviously, you know, like any loan fund, there are different layers of risk with each loan. And so we certainly have a couple that we're more actively talking to than not. But overall, the performance has been really strong.
Yeah. But in a way, I would have kind of, you know, hope you had been some losses, because you're providing this really critical thing that sometimes things are not going to go to plan. I mean, it's quite risky funding in a way, but anyway, amazing. And I love that. Funding at openroadalliance.org. It could almost be, you know, like help at openroadalliance.org. It's like the bat phone. Fantastic. Caroline, thank you so much for coming on. This has been really enlightening for me, and I hope it's helped so many other organizations. But we're going to link up all the show notes in the links and things to Open Road Alliance, the website and everything. And any sort of final sort of pieces of advice or message to those out there who may be listening to this at a time when things seem that they might fit that criteria?
Yeah, well, I think my least favorite thing to hear from an entrepreneur is, I wish I'd known about you 6 months ago.
Yeah.
We're planting the seeds here today. I also often say that I hope I don't hear from people, because that means something has gone wrong. But we're around, we're open for business, and feel free to reach out as the unexpected arises.
Fantastic. So that's openroadalliance.org. And Caroline, thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks a lot, Andy.
And that was Caroline Bressan, Director of Social Investments at Open Road Alliance. Thank you so much, Caroline, for coming on, for providing all of that about what Open Road Alliance is doing. And it's an amazing, amazing service. I use that term service, but I think it is. It's providing incredible service to the social impact sector. And I'm really chuffed that we've managed to share that with you and to demystify and provide that tool within your toolbox to mitigate those horrible delays that can happen. So just a quick reminder, head on over to findingimpact.com. Check out the show notes. This is episode 113 with Caroline Bressan. And while you're there, make sure you sign up to the newsletter. That's a digest that comes to you with the latest episodes, but also with a few choice links around the web of things you need to know about. So I hope you sign up. I hope you enjoyed the show. That's it. Have a great week.
Findingimpact.com. Helping you scale your social business.